Welcome to the Nick Blevins Family Ministry Podcast. Our goal is to help you maximize your church's potential. You'll hear from top leaders in children's, student, and family ministry about the principles and practices they use. Now here's your host, Nick Blevins.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 106 of the podcast. In this episode, I talk with Charlie Condor about school partnerships and a really cool thing that she did to partner with schools as a youth minister that she developed over a long period of time that has really grown and moved into other schools in her area and other churches and youth ministries kind of jumped on board. Really cool story. And we also talk about women in youth ministry. But before we jump into that interview, just want to wrap up something we talked about last week on the podcast. So if you're listening as they come out, we celebrated 2 years, which has been great. Thank you so much to everybody who's listened and subscribed and left ratings and reviews. And as part of the celebration, we gave away some free Starbucks coffee and free Dunkin' Donuts and all that, but also wanted to pick some people who have left a review of the podcast as winners for some Amazon gift cards and especially one ticket to the Orange Conference in 2019. So here is who has won, and this is based on your username in Apple Podcasts. So obviously you're going to have to email me because most of them I won't know who it is. But here are the people that won the Amazon gift cards. It was Todd McKeever, Jason Yan, Hattrick 12, Parcus Aurelius, which might be my favorite username, Parcus Aurelius, and Liza XM. If that was you, if you're one of those five people that has left a review and you're going to get a free Amazon gift card for $15, just email me at nick@nickblevins.com. And now the big winner of the Orange Conference ticket for 2019, the username is Brew Pru, B-R-U space P-R-U. If that is you, go ahead and email me. You've won an Orange Conference pass for 2019. Your kind of title of your review there was that you love the variety of topics. That's great. I hope you do. I do as well. I imagine many people listen to, you know, whichever episodes fit their area of ministry, because we talk about preschool, elementary, middle school, high school. Like, we're going to talk middle school and high school ministry today. Topics that span all of those ministries, next-gen pastor roles, all of that stuff. So I also love the variety of topics. I hope you all do as well. But there you go. Those are our six winners from last week. Thank you all for leaving ratings and reviews and all of that. But now let's go ahead and jump into my conversation with Charlie about women in youth ministry, some questions I had for her, her observations, being able to coach women in youth ministry, being a woman who's served in youth ministry and, interestingly enough, didn't have any experience in a youth ministry herself growing up until she was on staff as a youth minister, but also school partnerships and this really cool thing that she created. So here you go. Today I'm joined by Charlie Condor. Welcome to the podcast, Charlie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing really good. Getting excited for summer.
Me too. I was so done with that weather. So it's great. I love it now. It's hot and warm up here. I mean, it's raining a bit, but it's good. I love it. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You work for Orange now, but that's kind of new, like a year in. So give us maybe a little bit of history, too, so you can introduce yourself to the podcast listeners.
Of course. Yeah. So my name is Charlie Condor, and I recently joined the Orange staff. I left full-time church ministry last July. So this is my first summer not being a youth pastor, and I'm a little nervous. I'm afraid I'm going to miss camp.
I was going to say, you shouldn't be as busy, I would imagine, but I guess maybe in different ways. But you're right. You're going to miss it. That's what's going to happen. You're going to miss some of it.
Yeah, I will, because there's nothing like that middle school camp smell, you know? It's all good
stuff,
though.
You won't miss that. But there'll be other things you miss.
Yeah, there will be other things. But yeah, I actually, before ministry, I worked in the deaf and hard of hearing section of the school system, working with deaf and hard of hearing middle schoolers. And that was really awesome and a lot of fun. But I really felt like God was calling me to do more with students, because there's only so much you can do within the school system, right? And so I went into student ministry, and I never had been to youth group before I was the youth group. And so it was just an interesting take to take this teacher and turn her into a youth pastor. But God definitely guided my steps. And so I've been serving in the metro Atlanta area at a Methodist church for several years. I don't always like to say that because then people know how old I am, but anyway,
several is pretty generic. I think that's a good term. Several is like 6 years and you're 27. I mean, you know, That works.
Yes. When you say like a couple of decades, people start doing math and I'm always ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Just leave that out.
Yeah. I just always try to leave that
several
alone.
Several's better.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I recently joined the Orange team. I'm an OS. That means I'm an Orange specialist, and I have the opportunity to help people maximize the Orange strategy in the context of their ministries. I've always served in a smaller church, being Methodist, and I think that that really brings something to what I get to do at Orange. And I am the small church chick. I kind of like to say it like that, the small church chick.
That's the official title.
Yeah, it's on my name badge, you know. And so I get to help smaller churches use the Orange strategy and how to maximize it and really make it work when you have 15 students instead of 150 students. So it's good.
Which is most churches,
I love it.
Which is most churches. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I always love when people say to me, well, we have a small youth group and we have about 50 students. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's an amazing amount of students.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I want to talk more about small church in a bit, but I also want to talk about what you did while you were at that church, something you started with the schools called Campus Thrive. But before that, before even that, I have to ask, as you became kind of a youth pastor with having never been in a youth group, did you just do what seemed right? Did you have any guide to, I mean, like what was your guide to what you were going to create for youth in your church when you didn't really have the blueprint, good or bad, from, you know, your own history?
Yeah. Well, I started with The Seven Checkpoints, which is, I'm going to say it's an older book by Andy Stanley and Stuart Hall. And I read that and I thought this book is like really the guiding principles on how to do ministry. Because I have a daughter. When I started ministry, she was in kindergarten. She has already finished her freshman year of college. So, as you can see, I've been in it for a minute. And when I read that book, I thought, these are the things I want my daughter to know and to live into. And so that really became the principle behind how I did ministry. Interestingly enough, that led me to finding Orange. And I actually connected with my OS over the years, who was Stuart Hall. And he helped me a lot and gave me ideas on how to do ministry. But I think I had the advantage. I think if you grow up in a church, you have this idea about youth ministry and how it should go. And that wasn't anywhere on my radar, right? I was like, doors were open to every kid. Everybody came. It was, you know, community-wide type church. It wasn't church in the walls of our church. We met in our parking lot a lot of times. And as our ministry grew, that was a great place for us to be. And it was just so much fun, right? Because I didn't already have an idea of what it should be like.
Now, tell us about Campus Thrive, and there's a connection there with your youth ministry,
yeah,
how that all worked. But how did it come about? What is it, and how did it come about?
Yeah, so Campus Thrive is a student-led club at their middle schools where they have an opportunity to share their faith with their students. We have a teacher who supports the club, and then we have an outside church that helps guide the students. And so while the students are on campus, they meet twice a month. Before school even starts, they have an opportunity to have worship. So over the years, we've had students that would share their talents and lead worship. They would give a message. So they would read scripture, give the message. We'd have a different student share their testimony. And listen, how powerful is it to hear a six-year-old give their testimony? I'm sorry, not a six-year-old, a sixth
that
grader.
Would be pretty
oh my
cool.
goodness. Yeah. But a sixth grader to share their testimony. And then how many kids in the hallways came because we were giving away free Chick-fil-A biscuits, right? Everyone comes for the free food. But there were so many students over the years that lit up when they heard another student sharing issues that they were going through as well. And so it has been a ministry that's grown exponentially. Sometimes we started with 10 kids attending club, and the next time we'd have to move to the cafeteria because we had 100 kids coming. And so it was such a great thing because on the other Fridays, when the students were meeting at the schools, there was an opportunity for the local church to coach those students on how to lead on campus. And you often see clubs like this, like FCA in high school, right? I mean, you see a lot of that, but you don't necessarily see a lot of this happening on a middle school campus. So I think it made it really unique for this to be happening in our community. Actually, in my county, there's a lot of clubs that happen all around our county. And so it grew, and all these youth pastors of every denomination are involved. We have parent volunteers. And a lot of times we meet at a local restaurant, like a McDonald's. Sometimes we would meet on our church campus, and then we'd have volunteers that would drive students to school. Just different ways to make that work. And then during those times that we were able to coach the students, oh my gosh, we would help them unpack the scripture, help them to make it relevant to their audience, which were their peers, right? And walk them through on how to share their story and why it was important to share their story. And it was an opportunity for us to spend some time in prayer with our students. So what a great way to get to know your community. These were not necessarily like my church kids, but it really led the way for all students to actually come onto my church campus and for me to be in the school to see, you know, the majority of the kids.
I have like 50 questions that I didn't email you now that you've described it that way. But let me just, I'm trying to keep them all in my head. If I back up to the early days, it started at one school, right?
Yeah.
And then, so how did it go from one school to now many schools and from like right. you and your church to multiple churches?
Yeah. So the area that I live in was very small at one point, right? Like in every metro in that area, we've all grown. And there was one middle school. That middle school morphed into three middle schools. So that's calling more people to be involved in those. And then as youth pastors often do, we're friends with other youth pastors in the area. And they're like, oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. So it was started their middle school closer to their church. And so it's interesting how that began to spread.
Did you, like, I'm trying to picture, you even mentioned, you know, you're helping kids unpack the Bible and learn how to share their faith. And I'm also thinking about multiple schools. Was it highly structured? Like you trained volunteers? Was it pretty loose and other schools did their own thing? And you know what I mean? Like, what did that look like early days and even into it expanded?
The structure of the club was pretty laid out. So we knew the elements that we wanted to have, right? We wanted to have worship. We wanted to have a teaching time. We wanted to have a sharing time. There was often weird skits that made no sense, right? As often middle school skits do. And some kids love doing the skits and some kids don't, right? And so that was an element that we could add or take out. And then we had a student-led game, which is, you know, control chaos. Anytime you're doing anything with middle school students, and especially on campus, because you're working with students that don't know you, right? And they don't know what your expectations are. And so we never stand up in front of the crowd at the school. We allow students to call everyone to attention and legally, right, too. I mean, I can't do anything on school campus. And mm-hmm. so it's so fun to see them work through like, hey, no one's listening to me. How do I get people to listen when I step in front of the room? I'm going to read the scripture. When I read it, it doesn't make sense. So how do I make it make sense to my friends, right? And so we worked through all these different techniques with the students, but really the club rhythm kind of stayed the same.
How about the, you know, you had the structure, the rhythm, all that's the same in terms of like what you were teaching them, what other schools taught them once they got involved? Was it pretty loose too? Like they picked their own thing, or did you help guide that content wise, I guess is what I'm talking about.
We would help guide the content. So we would work through parables. There were certain Bible stories that we like to work through. And over time, I think everybody kind of does their own thing, but just similar structure, at least.
How did you serve the school in the early days? And then how did they end up helping, you know, down the road? Because obviously a good partnership created there. How did that start and what did you do?
I think of a lot of ministries don't often get involved with the school. I was at a church yesterday that has a school on their campus, and yet the youth pastor had never even been in the school. And I'm like, what? Wow. Like that, to me, that feels very foreign, because the minute I started doing ministry, I was like, I need to meet the principals. And I don't know if that came out of being a teacher first, but I know that in those schools, there's a lot of broken kids. And I knew that at my small church that I was serving at, we only had a handful of kids. But if we have enough students to split one middle school into three, there are tons of students in our community that needed Jesus. And so I always went to the school and I introduced myself, and I wasn't trying to impose or bring an agenda. But a lot of times on Monday mornings, I just held the door open as students walked in and just said good morning to them. I would bring, I call it kind of bribery and kind of not, But I would love to gift the teachers drinks and snacks during the school year, especially during testing, right? Those teachers are working hard. And so we would deck out the teacher lounge and all kinds of snacks and Starbucks for them. And, you know, it's just a way for us to love on them, right? Because they see the students every day and we may be only seeing students once a week. And it's interesting as you begin to build that partnership, the school begins to trust you, right? And something really cool, this middle school allowed me to walk students from their school to my church. And that was really fun, right? Because my church is located between two middle schools. And it's not, I mean, they're like half a mile walks, but it's not too far, right? And when we began to really open up our campus to the community and the church and the school work together, we would provide after school tutoring before we started our worship night. So there would be an opportunity for students to get help. Oftentimes the school counselor would even call us at church and say, hey, so-and-so, man, he needs some extra help. And would just let us know as youth pastors how we could love on those students better. Isn't that awesome, right?
It is awesome. And I think everybody, every student pastor, even you know, children's pastors listening are thinking, I wish, you know, we had that kind of relationship. And some of them do, I'm sure. But you built that over time. How long are we talking about from like the launch of Campus Thrive till it's still going now? So,
oh, you know, over 10 plus years.
Yeah. And did you see, I mean, you know, again, this is, we're just looking through history in large chunks, but did it really grow rapidly at one point, or was it just kind of slow, steady growth, expanding to a couple other schools?
Yeah, it was definitely a slow, steady growth. And the reason why is because students have to initiate it. They have to advertise it in their school. A student has to be in charge of getting it on the school announcements. They have to make posters. And we've all worked with middle schoolers, right? And so even though they could be super pumped about something, they could forget to tell the school when to put it on the announcement.
No.
Really? Yeah, right? But that gives them responsibility. And it really begins to shape them as student leaders. And so you would hear students, they would get so disappointed. Hey, only 10 kids came to club this week. Well, and then we just work through some strategies. Well, what can we do to make that better for next time, right? And we always try to hype up like our end of the year celebration, right? And so really try to get a lot of kids and excitement, but that all has to be student driven. And so I think that's why growth doesn't happen fast, right? And mm-hmm. Your student leaders change throughout the years. You would have this really great student and then they would go to high school and then you're starting over again with the same conversations.
Yep. So obviously as it grows, kids are helping lead. I imagine that the kids who were a part of your youth group regularly, or maybe they became a part of your youth group, were probably leaders in your youth group too, because now they're owning this thing here at school and then probably being good leaders, you know, good models for other students in your ministry, I would imagine.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the students that were my leaders in Campus Thrive were kind of parent forced. Does that make sense? Because parents heard there's a club and, you know, it's about Jesus. So they're going to drop them off before school early on their way to work. And now they're forced to be in this club. And so a lot of times it was actually students who didn't even pick to be in the club. It was parents saying, oh, this is what you're going to do. But it's strange because those kids became great leaders and looked for a church home and then would come to my church. And even if it wasn't something, I never really tried to advertise my personal ministry, right? But you do have some of your own church kids that filter into that Campus Thrive. Sure. And so that allows for those to filter both ways, right? So you have kids that come into your Campus Thrive and kids that come to your church campus.
Yep. What did the partnership between the school look like once you got a little bit down the road? You know, how did they help you? What are some doors that maybe opened, some examples of things that, you know, that partnership looked like once you established this relationship?
Yeah. So typically, you have a teacher that sponsors your club. And a lot of times it was the school counselor. And the school counselor started to see a lot of change in the students in the school I worked in particularly, and started kind of a character club. They called it the Couch Cares Club because the school was called Couch Middle School. And they began to start a club within their own school on how to serve in the community because they saw such fruit from having this Christian club in their school. How fun is that? That they call the youth pastor and say, hey, we would like to do some service work. Do you know anything? And and we all know 100 things, right?
Yep. That's great.
Yeah, super fun.
Give us like a snapshot of what it's like today in terms of how many schools are in it, how many kids, and even maybe even a little bit of like what your youth ministry looked like once you had that thing rolling really well. What did that look like?
Well, it's hard for me to give a number on how many schools. I don't have a good blueprint for that. I don't know how many schools it's currently in. I know in my area, it's in all 3 of our middle schools. I know the elementary schools have even started some kind of, theirs is after school club. So isn't that kind of cool that you have like the club at the high school, middle school, and now elementary schools are picking it up?
That is cool.
And, yeah. And I can't recall what, I think they call it the Sunshine Club. I don't remember. The elementary school, I don't know what they call their club. But for me, my personal church ministry really grew because as I began to see all these students at the school and really saw the need of the student, we began to open our doors at our church community wide. And like I said, we walk those students to our church every week and we provide we call them adult walkers. We'd go down to the school and walk those students to our campus. And it's a pretty powerful thing when you see 50, 60 students walking down the street to church.
Oh, yeah.
And the community begins to ask, well, where are all those kids going?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, because right? You might be suspicious at first. Like, wait a minute, at least there's adults. So I guess there's that.
But, yeah, you know, there's adults.
What's going on here?
But isn't it interesting that we could walk that many kids to church because they were so eager to belong to something?
Yep.
And they wanted to be a part of something, right? And so that opportunity, I think, just being in the school and being a presence, and kids just seeing my face and just being there sometimes, right? I also served sometimes in the cafeteria. They were always looking for parent volunteers to work in the cafeteria to give the teachers a break. And I may not have been a parent at the time of a middle school student, but I was willing to give up, you know, 2 hours of my day to stand in the middle school cafeteria. And let me tell you, people don't want to volunteer for that.
I'm surprised.
People,
I can't imagine.
I know, right? People are not lined up to spend their day in the middle school cafeteria. But man, I wanted to be there. I wanted kids to know my face and I wanted kids to know who I was because it gave them a sense of, oh yeah, I know her. And then they would maybe start to come to the club or they would come to my church. And, you know, just being a familiar face can often change a lot of dynamics.
That's true. It's very true. So I think you mentioned you're not even sure how many schools it's in. And it makes me think of, there's a book. I'm not going to get this right. I want to say it's like Level 5 church planting or something like that. It was put out from the folks at Exponential that they're probably the biggest conference on church planting in our country. And the idea of the book is that, you know, there's different levels of multiplication. And, you know, like Level 5 would be you're multiplying, starting new churches at such a rate that you really can't control it anymore. And that's a good thing. You know, that's the idea is get to the place where it's not all under your control. And most churches in our country obviously are maybe Level 4 if they're multiplying at all, like they're doing campuses or church plants, but it's still very much under their control. You know what I mean? It's not like it's so big and multiplying that they can't even control it. But that's what it made me think about when you said you weren't even sure how many schools it's in. I'm thinking that's a good thing because in some ways it could be expanding and growing and it doesn't depend on you, right? That's a good thing.
Yeah, right, because it's other youth pastors who hear about it, other students who have friends in different communities, and they're like, hey, we want that, right? And so you just don't know the reach sometimes of what you can have when you start something like that.
That's awesome. So I want to shift gears in kind of a big way and talk about something else I know you're passionate about, which is women serving in youth ministry.
And yes.
I gave you a few questions that I thought about with that. The reality is I probably could have asked 20, but why don't you kick us off telling us like why you're passionate about this? What are the problems that you see out there? You know, tell us a little bit about your heart for this.
Yeah. So like I said, when I went into youth ministry, it was new for me. And I didn't know it would be a weird thing that I was a woman, right? Certainly wasn't in the Methodist Church. certainly not with the pastor that I served, right? Because he had three daughters and empowered them. And I began to see it was weird when I started meeting other youth pastors and being in other ministry types. That a strong woman pastor, especially in student ministry, was not the norm. Mm-hmm. Isn't that strange? Like, I really had no idea. You know, I grew up in the Midwest on a farm, and we did everything that the boys did, from the tractors to tending to cows. I mean, it wasn't, jobs were not divided by gender, right? And so when I moved here to Atlanta and I began serving in the church and I attended my first like youth pastor meetup, I was like, wow. All the other girls must have stayed home today, right? Because it was all guys.
Yeah.
I'm like, where's all my lady friends? And then as we began to meet every month, I was the only woman. And I had a fellow youth pastor one time tell me that he would bring a secretary so I didn't have to eat alone. And I was like, are you kidding right now? I'm like, I'm happy to sit with y'all and have the same conversations. And so I really, when I began to meet other women in youth ministry, I began to hear more about some of the roadblocks that we as women face in student ministry.
What are some of those?
Being left out at a lot of meals. I know the senior staff would invite all of the male staff to go to lunch, and a lot of times we were left behind. We didn't ride in the cars with them. That's something that was a church policy for us. And a lot of conversation happens at those meals, a lot of planning, a lot of great things. And yet we were always omitted from that. As a speaker, I love to speak to students. I feel really passionate about it. I feel like that God has really called me to that. And there was a lot of times when I speak, I have to be at my very, very best, because there's a lot of times I will never be given a second chance to share. And it's nerve-wracking, right? But there's such joy when you speak in an event and a girl comes up to you and says, I've never seen a girl youth pastor before. She's like, I've always wanted to do ministry, but didn't know I could. And man, doesn't that light a fire in your soul, right?
That's awesome. But it seems like, and maybe I'm wrong, because I do feel like it is growing.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't feel like it's made a lot of progress, or at least it doesn't feel like the progress has been
quick enough.
as quick enough, or even in connection with maybe progress in other areas, I guess. Maybe, I don't know. Even in the church, if I'm thinking about that. I don't know. Is that just me? I'm not sure. It seems like it's too slow.
Yeah, I do feel like it's too slow sometimes. I do coach a lot of women in ministry, and I think the burnout rate is higher with women. I think it's harder sometimes for women to juggle mom, life, marriage, ministry, you know, all the pieces. And so I also think there's less forgiveness within the church with moms in ministry versus dads in ministry. And that could be a skewed perspective. So don't get angry with me for saying that, folks that are listening. But I have, and it's not just me. I've coached lots of women over the years, and it seems to be a little bit of a skewed thing for women in ministry versus a dad in ministry. So I don't know. I do think the church is coming along, right? But sometimes progress can be extremely slow.
Yeah. And I think some of it obviously is, I mean, these are stereotypes. It's not true in every case, but sometimes the reason the dad can do what he does in ministry is because mom is taking on some more roles. And then if mom is the student pastor and still all of her the normal roles, that is a different pressure. Absolutely. Yeah. For sure. No different than a single parent. And I do think, I agree. I think there is, there's definitely, I don't know, unspoken. And I think oftentimes unintentional bias against women. Like nobody, like if you called it out, they'd be ashamed. Like, oh, you're right. That's silly. But it's, so I know there's the whole theological thing too, which is a whole other piece. But like
I feel
like even if theology, like we understand the theology within that, we still practice and and do things we shouldn't do if it were made very clear to us. Like, oh, you know what? You realize you, I don't know, pay that person that much more than that person, or you expect right. more from this person. That, you know, like that kind of thing. It would become yeah. obvious that, you know what? You're right. We are not treating them the same here.
Yeah. So just a little bit on that. I hired my high school pastor. At the church that I was at, I oversaw the student ministry. And so I was able to hire positions, and that, you know, that was my person to hire. And I live with a bunch of high school students, so I don't ever want to do high school ministry, I feel like. I love middle schoolers. And so of course that's my heart. That's what I'm gifted at. So I hire a high school person, and he needs more money than what we can offer. And immediately our church council was like, oh, of course. I mean, he's a father. I mean, he needs more money. And I'm like, but I have a family too. And it was so crazy because I had a ministry coach at the time who challenged me to go back and ask. And I called it the $10,000 question because I needed the matching pay. And in fact, I thought my pay should be more, right? Because sure. I had to, you know, manage the staff.
Yep.
And so it's harder, I feel like, for a woman, because you don't want to bring emotions into it. I want to be very factual driven. And so, you know, I went with all the facts about why, as the direct report, I should make more than the people that are serving under me.
Which is a silly thing that you have to even argue that, right? Like, you don't argue that anywhere else, right?
No,
like,
I know. But, you know,
I think I should make more than the boss. Is that cool? I think that, you know, like nobody normally, I don't think you argue that way.
I know, but like in the church world is such a finicky, weird place sometimes, isn't it? That those are the conversations that we have to have. And it's hard sometimes. I mean, I remember a staff member's fighting for maternity leave.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. not something that the church had ever had a policy on. And they're like, well, let's get one. Right. And there was a lot of tension around just having maternity leave. There was a lot of tension. I had a girlfriend who had a baby whose husband was traveling, and she had to take her child to a fall retreat. And the church was like, ooh, well, that's what you have to do sometimes. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just life and ministry and doing what you have to do to get the job done, right?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I understand the reasoning. Church, it's like church isn't business. Money is always tight. There's always financial issues in most churches. But the church should obviously lead the way in maternity leave, you know, paternity leave, which most churches I know don't. You know, like they're probably on the other end of the scale. The business world is the one doing a better job of that. And I get it because it does come to money. But still, that is actually one area where without the financial implication, you can be more generous there, because what you're talking about is just filling the need while they're out. Right. And so as a staff mm-hmm. team, you can kind of lean in and help more. It doesn't actually have to cost the church more. Right. Right? So that is one area where it's like, we should do much better there. But we don't, which is sad. How about, so I remember years ago, maybe 5 years ago, this conversation was happening somewhere. Maybe it was at Next with Orange. And so maybe it was 4 years ago, I don't know. And Reggie mentioned something that maybe it's somebody he had heard from somebody else, or I can't remember if he thought about it, but it was an interesting question. His question was, what if it is part of the reason we don't have more female youth ministers and even just other ministry positions, but is part of that because when they're young, like let's say high school guys or college age guys, we give them more shots to teach and be on stage than we do women. And so mm-hmm. they get sort of like a taste for it earlier on and a skill developed earlier on that women aren't getting as high school girls in college. Is that something you see too? Is that part of what we just need to shift so that even earlier on, they're starting to think, like you said, I could do this job. Like that's open to women.
Yeah. It's incredible to me when I go to an event and speak, and be the camp speaker per se, right? And I get to be the camp speaker for the weekend, and they've never had a woman in front of them before in that position, to on the stage, right? Sharing scripture, the gospel with them. And they've never seen that before. And it always boggles me, I guess because I grew up in a Methodist church, right? And we've always had women in ministry, but not necessarily mm-hmm. youth ministry though, right? We have a yeah. lot of women behind the pulpit, but not a lot of women in student ministry. And so It brings tears to my eyes when I meet these young girls and they say, wow, I want to do that too. I didn't know I could. But then do they go back to their church and nobody's developing that in them? I always give out my cell phone number, and I think you would be quite surprised about the kids who reach out to me and say, could you talk to me more about how you became a youth pastor?
Yeah.
Even here in Atlanta, at churches that you think would be better at that are not. And the guys tend to get more FaceTime.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's like, again, I think it goes back to the deep-rooted tradition isn't the right word. But sometimes, again, sometimes it's intentional and sometimes it's theological. And I'll say not, sometimes it's not well thought out theological, but sometimes it is well thought out theological, which is fine. But then a lot of times it's like, it's not, that's not even the issue. It's just, it's something you're not thinking about and you're ignoring or, you know.
Well, whatever. Just this year, I had someone send me an email and said that I was suggested to be their DNOW speaker and they were wondering if I was available. And I was like, I do have that weekend open if you want to go to my website. And then he called me and said, ooh, I didn't realize Charlie was a girl.
Oh, gosh, that's funny. I didn't know where this was going. That's hilarious.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay.
So, like, they heard about you, I guess, by name?
Yes,
somebody's
by
like,
names.
Hey, you should bring in Charlie. Okay, I can see how that.
Bring
I'm trying
Charlie.
To think, how in the world does this happen? But, yeah, I got it. Somebody, name recognition, and like, oh, and then they.
Yeah.
So, what happened?
How did that Well,
I got to know what happened.
I was really taken back because what do you say in those situations? Sorry that being a girl is offensive and I won't come. I mean, I don't know, right? Because like sometimes you get sarcastic, but you don't want to be that way. And you're like, okay. And so, well, I could suggest some of my male youth pastor friends to you. I mean, is a kind way to do it.
Yeah, that's too nice.
I know,
and again, I
know. I
mean, people, I don't know, whatever. If people have strong, anybody that's listening to this podcast probably heard me say this. If you have good theological conviction about eldership and women and because you've read the right passages and, you know, whatever. Okay, that's fine. But when it comes to a lot of other things, I don't have as much patience if somebody's theological position has not been well thought out and defended. Mm. Does that make sense? And I feel
Absolutely.
Like in the church, there's a pretty large basis of that where we've held on to a theology that actually is not super well thought out. And then it's been passed down so much that like I may not have even myself thought about it that much. I could be the pastor of the church, you know, like I've just kind of carried it on without digging into it. But so I'm assuming you didn't speak at that person's event.
No, they said they weren't really ready to have a female speaker. So I didn't show up at all and, you know, recommended a male friend who I knew would do a really great job. It's just sometimes that pill is a little hard to swallow. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
Because I know I would have done a great job.
You would have. I have a funny story that's sort of related to this. So somebody that we're a church plant. We're part of a church plant network. So a lot of times the planters that plant through us came up through our church's history and movement, which is not denominational, but. So it's non-denominational, but there's still connections and networks and all that kind of stuff. But every now and then there are people who are from outside. And we had a guy who was part of a faith tradition where, you know, women weren't pastors, certainly not elders. I don't remember if it was like – I don't know how strong it was in terms of some of the positions where they can't teach anybody but kids, you know, like that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have leaned that way. So if they didn't have it, it would have been, you know, pretty close. So anyway, he went to a conference with our pastor – and that was one of the points that we had to talk about. Now, in our movement, churches fall into different camps. So some are complementarian, some are egalitarian. It's not something – I mean, again, it's independent, so it's not like, you know, you can, I don't know, mandate anything anyway. Well, anyhow, he went there, and Daniel Strickland taught, and afterwards he joked, I think I just changed my theology, which by itself, like an instance or a circumstance or an experience should never change your theology. But it was at the same time, of course, that he was unpacking some of this on his own, doing the hard work, theologically reexamining all the good stuff. But I just thought that's funny because it's like, what if you have never dug into it enough? You've never given it a shot. Like, I don't think we're ready to have a female speaker. Like, well, I don't know. How do you get ready to have a female speaker? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Right.
Like, maybe you just do it. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
Maybe just jump in. Both feet. I don't know. You know, I'm so thankful, though. I've had some really great mentors in my life. Marco Stryker is one of them. And they've never put a cap on being a woman in youth ministry, right? They're some of the biggest encouragers I've ever had. And yeah. So even though I've hit barriers, I've never felt super discouraged because I think I've had really good people in my corner.
Real quick, what would you say to, because now a lot of people listen to this podcast and they're probably listening to this episode, lead in children's ministry, and it's quite the other way in terms of gender.
Yeah.
You know, like I've organized a network of children's ministry leaders in my area now for a little over a decade, and there's probably one guy for every 12 to 15 ladies.
That's how it is at Orange. We have one guy OS in the children's and preschool area. So
nice. Yep. And so it's kind of the other way in children's ministry. But so and I would say even in their church, though, a lot of ladies who lead in children's ministry face similar barriers, right, in their church than as a woman who's leading in youth ministry would. What would you say to the lady who's in that situation facing some barriers or haven't just struggling? And it could be in their church. It could be, like you said, with other pastors in the area. You know, like, what would you tell them?
Well, don't give up. I mean, ministry is hard regardless if you're a male or female. And sometimes it can be a really lonely place. I would look for a ministry coach. I would look for another female youth pastor that could pour into you and vice versa. And I would really find someone to invest in you, regardless of how many years you've served in ministry. We could all benefit from someone being in our corner and pushing us and encouraging us. It's amazing to me the turnover of women in youth ministry. And it's a sad and scary time when sometimes from year to year, the woman doesn't even stay in the same church because they're so discouraged. But what would that look like if we all had a cheerleader, right? And there are plenty of us out there that would love to be cheerleaders of other women in youth ministry. So.
Thank you. That's a good word. And I think community, I've asked this question before of other ladies, and community is always the answer. It seems like, you know what I mean? And it is.
It's absolutely
the
best answer. Yeah.
Don't journey that alone, because that's what can happen. Obviously, if you're facing that battle, maybe you're the only woman on staff and you just don't have anybody else to talk to. Like that's hard.
It's easy to get discouraged in those moments when you don't always feel like you have a seat at the table. So get a great cheerleader, man. They are the best pieces of my own life. And I love to be cheerleaders for other women. It's just life-giving, right? When you can help others find their voice and find their way, it helps you too, right?
Absolutely. So how can people connect with you if they have any questions about that? Maybe that's something that sparked in them, or maybe it's even the school partnership thing. They're thinking, oh, we want to partner our schools better. Tell me more. You know what I mean? Like, how can they connect with you?
Yeah, those are my two big passions. I would love, if you want to know more about how to connect with your community and your school, or if you're a women youth ministry and you're like, I don't have a cheerleader. Listen, ladies, I can hook you up. I have some really awesome women in my own life who love to cheer others on. And I can be found at all social media platforms at Charlie Condor. And I also have my own website at charliecondor.com. So yeah, find me.
Awesome. Charlie, this has been really helpful. Love what you created there with Campus Thrive and the work you're doing with Orange and with Youth Cartel, coaching women leaders and all that stuff. Just love that. Thank you for coming on the podcast and for sharing with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was really fun.
All right. Thank you. Well, there you go. That's my interview with Charlie. I thought it was interesting the partnership that she created with the schools and how a lot of it just came back to blessing them, serving them, connecting, creating relationships, and really leading a lot of that through the students, which I thought is really helpful. And it's a common story that I hear from anybody who's had a good partnership with schools and their church. So here's some action items I thought about coming out of that interview. One is to bless a local school. What can you do? Can you bring coffee or donuts or something to help bless those teachers and that staff and serve them? Maybe start a conversation with someone in the school about other ways that you can serve them. And who knows, maybe you can kind of have the same kind of partnership where they'll call on you to help. And then another action item would be to start that conversation with students in your ministry. Again, it really has to start with them and be led through them if it's going to work in schools. And so talk to your students in your ministry about how can your church and your ministry partner with their schools and maybe have a presence there. And if you're like me in our church, we have tons of schools that are represented in our student ministry. I mean, literally, there's probably 20, 25 schools. And so you might think, well, we can't partner with all those schools. but you can partner with one. So what's the one school? You know, in our case, I think we could easily pick the school maybe that's closest to us or something like that and just start with one. And who knows, maybe over time it can grow into something like Charlie helped start there in Georgia. And I also appreciated her comments on women in youth ministry and some of the challenges there and why we don't necessarily see more women serving youth ministry, but it is definitely growing, which is a great thing. And so I really appreciated her comments and her coaching of leaders. I think everybody needs a coach, and I love that she's coaching women in ministry through the Youth Cartel. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Again, thanks to everyone who participated last week. Congratulations on the 6 people who won. And again, be sure to email me if that was you. We'll make sure you get your gift card, or in case of Brew Prue, whoever that is, your free Orange Conference 2019 ticket. Until next time, hope you have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Nick Blevins Family Ministry Podcast. We hope this helps you maximize your church's potential. We would love to hear stories of how you apply what you've learned. You can do that by leaving a comment on iTunes or in the show notes at nickblevins.com.